I'm Chris Dengate.
And I'm Flint Duxfield, and this is The Signal.
There have been protests across the Middle East over the new US embassy in Jerusalem. So why all the fuss?
We officially recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
He's declaring war in the Middle East. He's declaring war against 1.5 billion Muslims.
Could the US decision to shift its embassy bury the entire Middle East peace process? That's today's Signal. We're going to get to that in a bit, but first, there were bomb attacks at three churches in Indonesia's second biggest city, Surabaya, yesterday, and it's pretty significant. We've had at least five suicide bombers, including a woman with children, detonate bombs during Sunday service. These are the biggest attacks in Indonesia in years.
How unexpected were they?
Well, they haven't come out of the blue. There have been a few Islamic extremist groups that have been active lately, especially in the past week.
To put it in context, this for Indonesia is the worst week of terror attacks going back more than a decade.
That's Dr. Greg Barton from Deakin University. He's a really close observer of the situation in Indonesia. In fact, when I spoke to him, that's actually where he was.
Indonesia had a decade of very serious terror attacks that were linked to Jamaah Islamiyah splinter cells inspired by Al-Qaeda. They've been on top of that the last decade by really dealing with the emergence of charismatic recruiters come bomb technicians who put together small cells. They've not been able to do that. There's been a series of small attacks over the last decade, mostly targeting police themselves. The rise of the Islamic State movement has put fresh energy into the networks, but they've been able to contain those new cells up until recently, when it appears, using the language of sleeper cells, that they're indicating that there are cells active that they haven't been aware of or not fully in control of.
So these attacks might have been carried out by sleeper cells, right? That helps explain why the police weren't able to catch it. But what about the other attacks?
They weren't quite as deadly, but they are still pretty serious. There was a riot at a detention centre near Jakarta, which turned into a 36-hour standoff between counter-terrorism police and extremists being held there. Five officers were killed. And yesterday, police killed four Islamic extremists in West Java who were apparently planning attacks of their own.
So those three events together are more than anything they've had to deal with in any given week in the last decade. And that suggests that Islamic State still has significant support, and some of it's not on the police radar, at least not fully under their control, and that they've got some intent. Typically, Islamic State has launched attacks during Ramadan, and Ramadan begins next week, so we can perhaps expect more attacks coming during the Ramadan period.
The Indonesian police do seem to have been relatively on top of terror threats in the country over the past couple of years. Is this a sign that it is getting out of their control?
It would be too much to say at this point that it's getting out of their control, but this is a sign of the sort of thing that we've been fearing for really a good 3 years now, ever since it became clear that Islamic State had significant influence in Indonesia. There was always the worry that that energy coming from Islamic State, which the entire world, of course Australia, has been feeling, and in Indonesia's case has resulted in a significant number of foreign terror fighters leaving Indonesia, that that would result in fresh leadership and more success in launching attacks in Indonesia and in Malaysia and elsewhere in Southeast Asia. So far, police have been able to stop that from happening. The worry is this week that maybe there's going to be something slipping through that they're not able to stop.
So this is pretty much that fear which we've had here, that foreign fighters returning from Syria will carry out more violence in their own countries.
Right, and one difference in Indonesia, though, is while we've had these quite controversial laws in Australia that allow police to charge people who might have returned from fighting, Indonesia doesn't have anything like that. And Professor Clive Williams from the ANU reckons that's a major security risk.
I think the police have been arresting people, but they actually don't have a charge that they can lay on people who are returning, as I understand it. You have to actually conduct an attack in Indonesia to be charged for terrorism in their legislation. So most of these people seem to be arrested and then subsequently are released. So I think it will be a problem because, although, of course, some people have come back from war zones, have had enough and just want to settle down and do nothing or not get involved in violence anyway, I think that clearly there are many who want to continue the fight. And given the numbers, and we're talking in the hundreds of people having returned from Syria, it's certainly, I think, worsened with the loss of the caliphate in Syria and Iraq.
Which I guess is exactly what the experts had been warning us could happen with the demise of the Islamic State in the Middle East. And Clive Williams says that means we could be in for a lot more attacks in Indonesia, possibly even targeting Australians.
I think the violence will continue, and I think it may well worsen. And I think the one thing that concerns me is that they might then try and do the kinds of attacks that we had seen in the past from Jemaah Islamiyah and others. Certainly if they were to attack expats, Australians would be very much in the frame in Indonesia. You know, we're seen as so closely identified with the US, and because we were involved in the US-led coalition against Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, that we certainly are a target.
As of tonight, the US will have a working embassy in Jerusalem. There's never been one there before, and it's kind of a strange move because every other country has their embassy in Tel Aviv. So why is the US striking out? And the US government might be celebrating, but large swathes of the Arab world are furious.
Over the weekend, there have been rallies in neighbouring Jordan, in Turkey, and at least 100 Israelis marched through downtown Jerusalem. Now, they all say moving the US embassy will increase tensions with Palestinians and lead to violence. On the other hand, plenty of Israelis are quite happy about it.
The Israeli government is over the moon. From their perspective, this is something they've been pushing for literally decades. They've tried pretty much from every US president, Republican or Democrat, to declare Jerusalem the undivided capital of Israel. And every administration has not done that, except and until Donald Trump.
Anthony Lowenstein is an independent journalist and author who's lived in Jerusalem and studied the area.
So West Jerusalem is where majority Jewish population, there are some Arabs there, but it's mostly Jews. Living standards are relatively high. In the East Jerusalem, which is where I used to live, it's a predominantly Palestinian area. Living conditions are far lower. The way in which the Jerusalem administration and the Israeli government gives resources to both sides is vastly different. In short, it's a divided city, and getting more divided, I might add.
This is essentially the US or the Trump administration kind of unilaterally giving official recognition to Jerusalem as the capital. But what in real terms does that actually change?
From day to day, not a lot. In many ways, to be honest, this is symbolic. I'm not saying it's not a destructive symbolism, but it's, you know, if you ask me what happens tomorrow, next week, not a lot will change. What I think it does do, though, in a way, is clarify and is almost a refreshingly honest acknowledgement of how the US views this conflict. Because still to this day, the Australians, the Europeans, many other people say we need the strength and power of Washington to somehow broker peace. But the truth of the matter is this decision, this opening of the embassy, in my view, makes that not just impossible, but just ridiculous. It's just not going to happen.
And that's because putting a US embassy in Jerusalem is seen as picking a side in pretty much the thorniest issue between Palestine and Israel. So the US is meant to be independent in these peace negotiations, which includes the official status of Jerusalem.
Right, so this might seem like a daft question, but what is the capital of Israel?
Yes, well, it's actually not a daft question. It's an interesting question to answer. Look, clearly the Israeli government for many years has said that the capital is Jerusalem. If you ask Palestinians what's the capital of Israel, they'll probably say, well, it's kind of should be Tel Aviv, which is about an hour away from Jerusalem. But a lot of the centres of power for Israel itself is in Jerusalem and has been for a long time.
So that's like the judiciary and parliament are all in Jerusalem? Indeed.
And right. Obviously there are certain government offices in Tel Aviv.
But and Tel Aviv is where every other embassy, and including in the US until now, is located in or around Tel Aviv. Is that right?
Absolutely. And including the Australian embassy is there. Virtually no country in the world, apart from the US and Guatemala, is moving their embassy. That's it. So the majority of the world still believe that any kind of move of an embassy to Jerusalem can only happen if and when there is a negotiated settlement between Israelis and Palestinians, whatever that looks like. Two-state solution, one-state solution, no-state solution, whatever that might be. And to me, it's inevitable at some point, 5 years, 10 years, 50 years down the track, that Jerusalem will have to be a shared city.
So the two-state solution is the mainstream approach to this conflict. It means an independent Israel and Palestine with a shared capital.
Right, but most Israelis don't want to see a divided Jerusalem.
The United States is just recognizing a historical fact. And it's simply absurd to maintain embassies in Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv is no longer the capital of Israel. It never was. Jerusalem has been the capital of Israel since 1949.
That's Dr. Emmanuel Navon. He's an expert in international relations at the University of Tel Aviv. He's a big fan of the U.S. embassy move. In fact, he says it's long overdue.
Since 1995, the U.S. Congress passed a law calling upon the president to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. And it's been pushed off since then because it might be an obstacle to the peace process. Well, we know exactly that what the peace process is about, and we know that, you know, moving the embassy is not going to affect anything. And I think it was about time for the U.S. president to make this decision and call a bluff that the reason why there's no peace in the Middle East is not because the embassy is not in Jerusalem. There are many other reasons, and this one is not one of them.
Okay, let's just backtrack a bit here. So where did this east-west division come from?
Right, so for the first 20 years of Israel's existence, Jerusalem was divided. Israel controlled the west and Jordan controlled the east. That is until 1967, when Israel went to war with its neighbours.
That's the Six-Day War.
Yeah, not a very long war, which Israel won and immediately declared the city as its undivided capital. Today, 86% of East Jerusalem is under direct control of the Israeli authorities and Jewish settlers. The problem is, the UN completely rejects Israel's control over East Jerusalem, saying it's all in violation of international law. But Israel's been ignoring the UN for 50 years, and Emmanuel Navon says it has every right to.
What is the UN? The UN has a majority of Islamic and Arab states at the General Assembly. And, you know, at the UN, at the so-called Human Rights Council, all they do is condemn Israel and completely ignore the actual human rights violation in the world, especially in the Arab world. So it's completely biased. You know, they have a majority there. So if you're talking about the General Assembly, it is a biased institution where the Islamic and Arab states have a majority and use it for their own propaganda. Every country has a sovereign right to determine what the capital is going to be, and that right includes Israel.
Okay, so if Anthony Lowenstein is right and this move is a likely nail in the coffin for any peace talks, why would Donald Trump do this?
I'm committed to working with Israel and the Palestinians to reach an agreement, and I will do whatever is necessary to facilitate the agreement, to mediate, to arbitrate, and we will get this done.
Well, Menahem Klein, who's a former advisor to the Israeli peace team and professor of political science at Israel's Bar Ilan University, reckons there's a really simple reason for this.
President Trump faces many problems domestically. The people that support him, let's say the hardcore of Bible Belt Republican supporters and hardcore right-wing people, those in Charlottesville, that for them it's a principle. For those newborn Christians and those who support fully, full-heartedly support Israel, it's a principle. It's a matter of principle.
And so far, it has been going over pretty well with the conservative U.S. media.
This will cap off what has arguably been one of the most successful weeks of the Trump presidency to date.
A move that recognizes Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
Jerusalem is only important to the world because of Judaism.
The fact is, it has belonged to them for 3,000 years.
Right, so it could be working for him, but this seems like a pretty big gamble just to appeal to Trump's base.
Totally, and tensions are already extremely high in the region. There'll be more protests today, and with that, a huge worry that it's just going to escalate the violence.
That's the Signal for today. If you do want to get in touch, it's thesignal@abc.net.au.
Catch you tomorrow.